Nandadayastutam drishtva paramananda nivrita krishnam chatatra chandobhi suyamanam sudishmita. Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherd men felt the greatest happiness when they saw that transcendental abode. They were especially amazed to see Krishna himself there, surrounded by the personified Vedas who were offering him prayers. Although the residents of Vrindavan considered themselves ordinary persons, Lord Krishna wanted them to know of their extraordinary good fortune. Thus, within a lake in the Jamuna River, the Lord showed them his personal abode. The cowherd men were amazed to see that the kingdom of God had exactly the same spiritual atmosphere as their own earthly Vrindavan, and that just as in their Vrindavan, Lord Krishna was personally present, in their unique vision, he was present as the Lord of the spiritual world. As Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur points out, these verses emphasize that Lord Krishna did not merely show the cowherd men a sample of Vaikuntha planet, but that he specifically revealed his Krishna Loka, the greatest of eternal abodes and the natural home of the residents of Vrindavan who loved Krishna more than anyone else did. Om Agyan Timidandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Akshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Guru Bhai Namaha. Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherd men felt the greatest happiness when they saw that transcendental abode. They were especially amazed to see Krishna himself there, surrounded by the personified Vedas who were offering him prayers. Krishna's divine lila is impossible to understand, and it is impossible to predict, even by the greatest intellects. Because Krishna is the complete whole. He is achintya. He is inconceivable by any of his parts and parcels. But all of his inconceivable, divine activities is only meant ultimately for the pleasure of his devotees and for the ultimate purification of all living beings. Although sometimes when a particular condition of life is happening, we may become confused and distressed because We cannot understand why is Krishna doing this to me or to someone that we love. But ultimately, for those who remain faithful and devoted through the difficulties, through the inconceivable conditions of life, Krishna ultimately rewards them. So here we find that the Vrijabasis, they are spending a night on the bank of the river. I'm sorry. It was the Dwadasi day, and Nanda Maharaj entered into the Jamuna to take his bath. No wrong motive. He was actually trying to perfectly follow his prescribed religious activities, the fasting on Ekadasi, and then to take a sacred bath at the time of Dwadasi. But somehow or other, there was a very slight mistake, and he entered into the water of Jamuna at an inauspicious moment. And the messenger of Varuna stole him away. He disappeared. He was gone. This was a great tragedy. This was a great crisis. He was the king of Brajbhumi. He was the leader of all the Brijbasis. He was the father of Krishna. What did he do wrong to deserve something like this? He was a pure devotee of the highest order. He was constantly immersed in the highest welfare activities of spreading love of Krishna throughout Brajbhumi. He was constantly, with the utmost affection and care, not only taking perfect care of Krishna, but he was also seeing to every need of every one of the residents of Vrindavan. He considered every Brijbasi like his own child. He was a perfect king. He was a perfect human being in every sense. But he made a slight mistake. He performed a technical error of going into the Jamuna a little bit too early. And for this, it appeared, he was gone. He was taken away. And the Brijbasis were very much in anxiety about this, that our leader, our king, Krishna's father, he's gone. And it describes in these slokas that the person who took Nanda Maharaj away was asuric. He was demoniac. It was actually his mistake. Due to his polluted mentality, he could not recognize the glorious qualities of Nanda Maharaj. He considered him an ordinary man, and he behaved in a most demoniac way. So, sometimes great devotees of the Lord, who are in such an exalted position of devotional service, sometimes, by the inconceivable will of God, sometimes they make mistakes. And sometimes the Lord even allows demons to take them away. Nanda Maharaj was virtually like in prison. He was captured, he was apprehended. Like a criminal. He was taken to the court of Varuna. He lost all his freedom. And Nanda Maharaj himself was thinking, why is this happening to me? And ultimately Krishna went to Varuna. What is this? Why you have taken my father? Varuna said, actually, my servant is an ignorant fool. He shouldn't have done this. And Krishna brought Nanda Maharaj back. Now, how is this possible? If not a blade of grass moves without the sanction of the Lord, why Nanda Maharaj, who is, for all practical purposes, such an innocent and pure Vaishnava, why did Krishna allow an ignorant fool and a demon to capture him, to arrest him, and to take him away from Vrindavan? We will discuss this in more detail tomorrow. But we find that after all this took place, Krishna gave his blessed darshan to Varuna. Varuna is a great devotee of the Lord, and Krishna wanted to give him his darshan for all his wonderful seva. And also, he wanted to show everyone his divine glory and power over all the devatas. After this very terribly disturbing experience that the Brijabasis had to undergo, Krishna wanted to show them how pleased he was that under all circumstances they have such faith and love in him and him alone that if they just continue in this way that he will fulfill all their desires. So after being in the disheartened condition of almost the condition of darkness that their beloved king was taken away, then Krishna just showed them all the spiritual sky. He showed them the Vaikuntha, the supreme Vaikuntha planet of Goloka Vrindavan. He was thinking, my devotees, they always want to know what their ultimate destination is. Let me show them right now. Right before their eyes, they saw the spiritual world. And in the spiritual world, they saw their own beloved Krishna being worshipped by the personified Vedas, by all the great saints and sages and rishis. Ah. They felt the ultimate, the greatest happiness. You see, if Krishna would have showed them Vaikuntha, where everyone was worshipping Narayana, they would not have been very happy. And if Krishna would have showed them simply the Brahma Jyoti, the eternal spectacular light of God's energy, they would have not been so happy, because they were Krishna Bhaktas. They only wanted Krishna. And therefore, Krishna wanted to give them the ultimate hope that for you to go back to Godhead, it doesn't mean you're separated from me. It means you'll live with me eternally. Then they were very happy. Shukadeva Goswami explained to Maharaj Parikshit that there is a spiritual world by which the Lord appears just to fulfill the desire of his devotees. According to the particular form of God that you meditate on and develop love for in this world, you will go to a particular Vaikuntha planet where that Lord will eternally reciprocate love with you. Whether it be Lord Nrisimha Dev, Lord Varaha Dev, Lord Sri Ramchandra, Lord Vamana Dev, Sri Krishna. The Lord always fulfills the desires of his devotees. And the residents of Vrindavan, they were the perfect personifications of the verse of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Na dhanam na janam na sundarim kavitam vajagadisha kamaye mama janamani janmanishwari bhavatar bhakti rahoyti kithvai. I do not want wealth. The whole world is mad for wealth. Mahaprabhu said, I do not want wealth. I don't care anything for it. Wealth means gold. Bhagavatam explains that gold is like
yellow stool. Stool is simply something that's refuge. Everything material, when it is disconnected from Krishna, it is simply refuge, refuse. It is refuge for the ignorant, but it is refuse for the wise. Stool is something that you evacuate and you go away from. So everything of this material world is something that's like evacuation that you go away from. Bharat Maharaj was a great king. When he enthroned his son to take his kingdom for him, it explained he left his family, he left his home, he left all of his power and riches, just as a man leaves stool after passing it. And Maharaj Parikshit, when he was cursed to die in 7 days, he accepted this as good news, because he could just leave behind all these material things called wealth that everybody's aspiring so much for. He saw it like stool. So gold is called yellow stool. When it is for our own sense gratification, it's yellow stool. But when it's offered to Krishna, it's anything, everything becomes, even whatever it is, becomes gold when it's offered to Krishna. But it becomes like stool if it's taken away from Krishna. So anyways, Mahaprabhu said, I do not want wealth. I have no interest in it. Because everyone's suffering. And the more you become attached to anything in this world, the more you have to suffer. And the more wealthy you are, generally the more attached you become. Bhagavatam explains that people attached to their wealth in this world are like people drowning in an ocean who are attached to wearing a big, big, heavy, bejeweled golden crown. It just forces them to sink faster and drown. So Mahaprabhu didn't want that. I do not want wealth. I do not want beautiful women. People are mad after sex life and to see the beauty of the opposite sex. But I don't want that. Maitunya Agara. Everyone is under these shackles. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained that this shackle of attraction to the opposite sex is the source of all anxiety, frustration, and misery. Pungshastriya mayatuni bhavametam tayoramito hritiya grantimatu athogri hakshetra sutapti vitaya janasvimohoya maham mameti. This attraction between the male and female species, it creates a hard knot in the heart, which is so difficult to ever be released from. That hard knot is the basic principle that creates all other material attachments. And yet people in this world are mad, working so enthusiastically just to tighten this knot. Mahaprabhu said, I don't want beautiful women. Nor do I want followers and fame, prestige and influence. Pride to be adored is such a deeply seated contamination in everyone's heart. We want to be recognized, we want to be respected, we want to be followed. He said, I don't want any amount of followers, disciples. I don't even want liberation. Any type of liberation. I don't want mukti. I don't want freedom from birth, old age, disease, and death. I don't even want to go to Vaikuntha. I only want one thing. My Lord Krishna, son of Nanda Maharaj, I want to be your servant birth after birth after birth. I want to be with you as your servant, that's all. And the Brijbasis, they were most perfectly in this mood. of unmotivated, uninterrupted, loving surrender and service to Lord Sri Krishna. You know the story of the Braj Gopis. During the springtime, there is a ras dance that takes place near Govardhan Hill. Just on the Govardhan Parikram, a few kilometers away, is a place called Chandra Sarovar. The bhajan kutir and samadhi of the great Vaishnava poet Suradas is still present there. But this Chandra Sarovar was one of the favorite places of Lord Sri Krishna and the gopis during the spring Ras Leela, which took place at Govardhan Hill. And that place, Chandra Sarovar, Chandra, the moon god, in order to assist this wonderful Leela, he filled a Sarovar with Soma Ras, nectar, for Krishna and the gopis to drink, just to have nice refreshments during their dance. That was his service. Just close to that, there is the place that Krishna left the gopis during their spring ras. And the gopis were frantically looking everywhere for Krishna. Sambhoga and Vipralamba. These are the two moods that Krishna creates to constantly keep the dynamic love between him and his servants exciting. In spiritual world life, there's nothing stagnant. Recently, one of our wonderful devotees was explaining to me about a particular very, very, very famous philosopher. So many thousands, tens and thousands of people come to hear him. And he was explaining, he's a Mayavadi. He was explaining how ridiculous this idea of the spiritual world is, Vaikuntha. He was criticizing the four types of liberation. And he said, what will you do when you go to Vaikuntha? You'll have the same type of form as God, Narayan, and then you'll just be looking at him. And for the rest of eternity, what do? You just sit there looking at each other? He said, if I'm sitting in a train for so many hours looking at you and you're looking for me, at me, eventually I'll just say, get away from me. And you get sick of each other. So similarly, what kind of a hellish idea is this? That you're just sitting in Vaikuntha looking at some form of God and he's just looking at you for all of eternity? Therefore, he was refuting this idea of personalism and spiritual form. But unfortunately, such a ignorant man, who is such an incredible juggler of words and logic, doesn't understand at all what is spiritual life. According to the Shastra, it is explained that the spiritual world, it's one thing to say you don't know, but it's another thing to say you know and to blaspheme the Lord in his spiritual world as an authority. But in the spiritual world, in all the Vaikuntha planets, there is an ever-increasing dynamic ecstasy of love that's constantly flowing between the lover and the beloved. There's constantly service, seva, infinite varieties of seva. And every form of seva is fully satisfying to Krishna and his devotee. And everything is ever increasing. Nothing is ever stagnant. Nothing ever remains the same. The Ananda Shakti remains the same, but the manifestations of the Ananda Shakti are constantly full of variety. The fact is, even if Krishna wanted to sit and look at you for the rest of eternity, he would be at every moment for the rest of eternity becoming more beautiful to you, and you would, for the rest of eternity, becoming more beautiful than him. Therefore, the fact is, you can sit and look at each other for the rest of eternity, and you would just be fully filled with excitement and just an ever-increasing flow of dynamic ecstasy. That is the spiritual world. That is spiritual nature. But in Vrindavan, spiritual nature is in its most perfect, ultimate state of ananda, or pleasure-giving. And that takes place primarily through sambhoga and vipralamba. That Krishna meets the gopis, he meets the brijvasis, all of his friends, and that meeting just increases the excitement and the flavor of their love. But then he leaves them. He remains within their hearts as his bhava expansion, but he leaves them. He casts them in separation, because that separation creates an anticipation of meeting him that only increases their love. And then when they meet him again, their love is increased above and beyond ever before. And then when they come to that platform, when Vipralamba, when he leaves again, then that ecstasy is increased even more in the longing for the beloved. And then when the meeting again comes, that ecstasy becomes enhanced. In this way, the eternal love between the Lord and his devotee is constantly increasing through the process of sambhog and vipralamba. So when Krishna was dancing with gopis at Govardhan, he decided to increase their pleasure, so he left them. And they were just searching everywhere for him. They were going to the plants, and they were going to the trees, and they were going to the insects and the wild animals in the forest. Have you seen our beloved lotus-eyed Shyam Sundar? Where has he gone? And Krishna was hiding from them. And they happened to be coming right where he was hiding. So in order to not be recognized, he transformed his form into Narayan, the Vishnu form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the gopis, they looked at Narayan and they offered their respectful obeisances to him with great reverence, because they knew that he is the Supreme God. He is the Lord of all creation. He is the master of even Brahma and Shiva. He is the creator of everything that exists. So they bowed down. But it was a formality. Because what was their prayer to Narayan? All glories to you. Can you please tell us, have you seen Krishna? Where did Krishna go? They were not interested in Narayan. Formally, they offered respects, but their hearts only loved Krishna. Narayan did not give them any pleasure. He was not their object of love. So they simply asked, where is Krishna? And with his four arms, he pointed, he went that way. And then they bowed down and they ran that way, looking for Krishna. They didn't care about God or Vaikuntha. They only wanted Krishna. They preferred being with this restless, mischievous cowherd boy than with the supreme lord of the goddess of fortune, the master of the universe. They left him looking for Krishna. Ultimately, when Sri Radharani came, she said to Narayan, have you seen Krishna? And Narayan tried to do the same thing, but before Radharani's love, two of his arms just, they could not remain. He again revealed himself as Krishna. The power of Sri Radharani's love defeated him. But we learn from this story, what is the nature of the bhaktas of Brajbhumi? They are simply attached to Krishna. So therefore, if the residents of Vrindavan were thinking that the supreme destination of life after this, if we go to Vaikuntha and Krishna is not there like this, to them it would not at all be nice. It would be terrible to be without Krishna, no matter where you are. So Krishna wanted to encourage them. So he showed them the supreme Vaikuntha planet, and he wanted to show them that I am residing there in this form, where everyone's worshipping and playing with me just like you are now. And then they became very happy. Very well. In this way, Krishna fulfilled all their desires to show it, to show them, not only are we playing with you now, but this will be our eternal occupation, to simply be loving you and serving you without any interference. But before Krishna revealed this most wonderful blessing upon them, first he cast them in tremendous anxiety before showing Nanda Maharaj that he will be eternally engaged in loving relationships with him. He put him in prison. He had him arrested and sent way down under the ocean, under the water. So Krishna's mercy is very, very mysterious and very inconceivable. But it is always perfectly according to his own plan for the purification of his devotees, and for the ultimate elevation and pleasure of his devotees. And devotee must not try to understand everything Krishna is doing and why, but we must have faith in this principle in all circumstances of life. And this faith comes by hearing. By hearing the wonderful narrations of Krishna's pastimes from devotees who explain it in such a way that it has relevance to our life. By associating with devotees and hearing the message of Godhead, we develop faith. And in that faith, essentially, we understand that everything Krishna does is perfect. It is not something that our tiny little jivatma brains can fathom. Even in the spiritual world, no one can fathom the extent of Krishna's mercy. What to speak of the conditioned souls in this world. We are Anu, infinitesimal. Krishna's Vibhu, he's unlimited, he's infinite. But the supreme manifestation of his infinite nature is in how he never forgets, he never neglects his devotee. In every situation, he's arranging ways to draw his devotees nearer to him. And sometimes, as we read here, he works through demons. Sometimes he allows demons to temporarily conquer his devotees. But he has a master plan, and this is just one little part of it, to bring everyone back home, back to Godhead. And therefore a devotee must understand in principle that Krishna's master plan is always good. It is always for our purification and upliftment. And with that faith, we continue in our devotional service. We continue chanting his holy names. We continue associating with his devotees. And with folded palms, tathendukam pam sushamikshamano bunjana evatmakritam vipakam. We just thank Krishna for everything. We're grateful to Krishna for everything. We're grateful on the basis of faith, not on the basis of an intellectual understanding of why this is happening. We know why it's happening, because it's Krishna's mercy. The details, we may never figure out. Krishna, thank you very much. Hari bol. Are there any questions? Yes, Mahaprabhu.
Maharaj, last week when I was preaching somewhere, so one gentleman asked me a question. Usually in any Vaishnava in India, in Bhagavatam class or the classes given in the temple, they never talk about so openly about sex or the stools.
About what?
Sex and stool, as you nicely explained wonderfully well. So how we should reply them when they talk, when they say that you people, whether we go to ISKCON temple or your temple, and now you are talking to us, though I was very heavy finally, I say that's because everything depends on sex and material world. So how to reply such type of people, because usually sex and things are never told by these big, big Mahatmas and Sadhus, and the justification is maybe in best because the people are very much addicted for sex, so they may be talking about sex, but for India this is not the way they should talk.
Srimad Bhagavatam is filled with such talk. So is Mahabharata. So is Ramayana. We are only quoting the Shastras. We are not talking, we are just quoting. Correct, Shrigalim, Panditji? Because this is the most... society today, even in the name of religion, Sri Radha Gopinath Ji Ji, we must understand that the nature is that we don't want to deal directly with the problem, but we want to somehow or other try to go around it and make things a little better in life. It's like yesterday, I was in the airplane with our Dr. Solanki, huh? And he's in charge of the whole state of Maharashtra's relief for AIDS. And if you want to hear the true reality of what lust can do to a human being, you talk to him. It's ghastly. He was explaining to me how, you know, in AIDS relief, he and some counselor ministers from European countries, you know, they're helping, giving funding and granting to the government, and sometimes they go to these houses of prostitution, he said, and they're trying to convince the prostitutes to convince their clients to accept certain devices to prevent AIDS. And he said he was looking at these clients and they were like the lowest bestial animals in the entire creation. He said he couldn't sleep at night. Even his secretaries and these other counselor people, he said they couldn't sleep, they couldn't eat after seeing these human beings. And they were people from every class of society, from all castes. Some of the wealthiest people, some of the poorest people, all classes. It has nothing to do with income or education or caste or anything like that. People from every sector of society, he said they're just totally obsessed with such violent lust. He said he was appalled. And there's just not a few. Right in the city, there's millions of people in that predicament. It's such a gross bondage that brings a human being lower than the lowest animals. Kama esha krodha esha rajoguna shamudbhava mahashino mahapatma vidyanami havaira. Krishna says it is lust only which is the most deadly enemy in this entire world. It is the symbol of sin. And we may be a little more sophisticated about it. We may not come down to such an external form of being such an animalistic beast, but at the same time it's there in everyone and it's degrading the soul. And unless we understand the problem and discuss the problem and give the people the proper understanding of the problem and the solution, unless a doctor gives you a proper diagnosis of what the disease is, it's very difficult for him to convince you to take the right medication to cure it. Correct? It is fact, simply by talking about these things is no solution. Because the whole world's talking about these things. They don't want to hear about it from a sadhu, but they'll talk about it all day long amongst their friends, right? But when they talk about it amongst their friends, they're glorifying it. But a sadhu condemns it and teaches you the way out of it. But generally, pseudo-sophisticated people, they don't want to admit that they have the problem. They want to hide over it, that I'm civilized, I'm nice. But lust is in everyone. Huh? And therefore the Bhagavatam just brings it right out as it is. And we are preachers from the Bhagavatam, so we must simply bring it out as it is, along with the solution. We don't want to discuss things that are obscene. It is not our sense gratification to talk things like this. But maitunya agara, it's the biggest disease and problem in the entire world. AIDS is the biggest problem on earth right now, externally, and it's all based on illicit sex. And people don't want to talk about sex from a spiritual point of view. They want to talk about it from an enjoying point of view. That's the problem. Or they want to just close their eyes and say, no, I'm a very distinguished, high-class person. I don't want to hear about these things. They don't want to hear about it, but they want to do it. Huh? they want to go to the movies where they hear about it in a completely entangling way to increase it. And they turn on the television to see it and hear about it in a way that increases. But if someone talks about it in a way to decrease it and give a solution to it, oh, no. I don't want to hear why you're talking like this. Janma mrityu vara vyadi dukha. People don't want to hear about death either. But we talk about death. Because it's a problem that must be solved in our life. We can hide our head in the sand, but we'll not solve the problem of the imminent suffering that is upon us. Tattva, what is your explanation? We shouldn't talk these things? Should. Tattva's a brahmachari. He's very high class. He likes to talk about these things. But he doesn't do it. He'll talk about it from a Krishna conscious point of view, but he won't do it. These people, they want to do it, but they don't want to talk about it. They want to talk about it only in a way that it's very nice. Huh? Any other questions? Yes.
You were talking about the yellow stool. Like, actually as a devotee, we may be having that much of knowledge that these things are actually a sense gratification and these are attachment. But maybe once you get into spiritual life, so many times it happens that parents, not with the maybe parental affection, they want to give you so many things. So actually when you take it, it becomes an obligation towards them. You really don't want to hurt them any time. And I mean, when you take it, we always try to convince ourselves that I'm taking for Krishna, maybe I can use it for Krishna's service. So how will you know that you're doing the right thing or wrong thing?
We need spiritual guidance and we need good sadhana. If we have good sadhana and good spiritual association, and good guidance, then it becomes naturally understood what is the best thing. But you have to be wise. But you have to give that to him in such a way that in a spirit
that they were going to understand its relationship with Krishna. If you expose your child to Krishna consciousness in a very strong way, then they themselves, they'll be preaching to you not to take things for sense gratification. Isn't that what's happening? No? Yes? Maybe? Give them a chance to be Krishna. Just expose them nicely to Krishna consciousness and make them happy. You can't deprive them. Make them happy. Give them. If a child is simply bored, he's going to want this, that, and everything else to keep him occupied. But if a child likes devotees and he's Krishna conscious, he doesn't need anything practically. Little Priyavrat, he's the son of the Mufflal family. They could be giving him everything. He doesn't want anything. He just wants to be with devotees. Just wants a mridanga. He just wants a mridanga, and he wants a dhoti, and he wants a kurta, right? And his parents could give anybody else of that status of society, he would have millions of toys and millions of games and all kinds of everything, and he would just be constantly wanting more, 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 and never satisfied. He has a few of those things, but factually, mostly he just wants a mridanga, and he wants kartals, and he wants books about Krishna, and he wants dhoti, and he wants kurta, and he wants nice japa beads, and he wants to go to the temple all the time. So because they're giving him Krishna conscious, he just doesn't need all these crazy material devices just to try to occupy their minds. So the more you give them Krishna conscious, the less they even demand these other things. And when you do want to give them something, it should be done in such a way that it can help connect their consciousness to Krishna. It's an exchange of Vaishnavas to give gifts. But the gifts should be gifts of preaching and gifts of some item to bring them closer to Krishna. To make them know that you love them in relation to Krishna. That is proper intelligence. Does that answer your question? No?
Actually, what I really meant is, like, what if our parents give us something?
And what if your parents give you something?
Yeah, so how to
accept it. But then use it for Krishna.
Then there'll be so much of obligation, you know, like, they give something and you don't want to hurt them in so many ways, like, when they give something, you feel so much, you know, that you don't want to hurt them in any way. And it may be against Krishna consciousness also, they may not like you to go to trip and all, and you don't want to hurt them, but, you know, like, if they give something and you become obligation, you always try to please them and keep them happy. Because you have already accepted something from them, you want to give back by obliging them in so many ways.
Sannyasis don't know so much about these things. But the principle is accept things that are favorable for devotional service and reject things that are unfavorable. If by accepting you're putting yourself in a bondage of commitment with them, then don't accept it. Definitely do not accept it. If by accepting you're simply showing them that you love them, but there's no bondage of commitment, then accept it and use it in Krishna service. What is the problem? They should know whatever you give them, you're going to use it in Krishna's service. Let them know. You'll accept it lovingly, you'll accept their love and use it for Krishna. But you cannot be bound by material conditions, by anything. You must be very careful. My father used to give me money, when he would make out the check, I would tell him, make it out to New Vrindavan.
You want to give it to me, make it out to New Vrindavan. And it would go right to, he would know, whatever he gives to me, I'm accepting his love, but it's all going, to Krishna. And other times he says, I want to give you something, but I want to give it to you, not to the community. I say, all right, you give me, and I ask him to give me something that can be directly used in Krishna's service. So that's the way brahmacharis and sannyasis deal with these situations. As a grihastha, you may have a slightly different presentation, but the spirit and the principle should be the same. If it can't be used in Krishna's service, if it's going to decrease your devotional service, you should reject it. And if there's some possible way that it can be nicely used in Krishna's service, then you should accept and use it. Thank you very much, Haribo. Just have Madhava preach to them. Have Madhava go to their house and have nice kirtan, dance, chant. Then they'll understand everything in due course of time.